Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. This is Chris Arps, co-host of The Weekend Report. Also, I come on the Mark Cox Show on Tuesday mornings, and I do the Glover Show every now and then. But my favorite person to be with is my co-host, Tony Colombo, on the Recon Report. How are you, Tony?
It is great to see you. Good. Thank you. We have Carl and you and me all here. It's the Recon Report
on
Friday.
You forgot somebody.
I was going to say, with a little bit of help.
Yes, we have Politico, my good friend Jim Gwinner. And Jim wants to, I want you to give a shout out to the Moose Lodge.
No, the Elks Lodge.
The Elks Lodge. Is there a difference?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I probably insulted a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, one's a moose and one's an elk. There's
you know
a difference.
About six hands and 500 pounds.
All the Elks Lodge members, Elks Lodge 9,
Lodge
I apologize.
Nine.
I apologize.
Lodge 9. Shout out to all my friends listening.
There you go.
Both of them.
I have our wedding reception was in the Florissant Elks Lodge.
Oh, where is it?
My wife and I.
Is it on Halls Ferry?
New Halls Ferry.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of down by Hazewood Central.
I know. I went to a wedding reception there. Is it where that road is closed?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's almost literally across the street.
I know what you're talking about. They have turkey
shoots
there.
Kind of category.
I had my 50th birthday party at my Elks Lodge.
Are you 50, Jim?
I am 51.
We as we were getting ready for that wonderful event, the greatest day of my life.
Not the birth of your children?
She might be listening. I overheard a conversation. My mom, you know, was my parents and her parents obviously were helping, you know, plan the reception. And my mom was on the phone with the people at the Elks Lodge talking about the setup of the room and everything. And she asked them if it was possible to take down the deer head.
That'd be a no.
At the end of the hall. And I guess the person was being very nice to her and saying, like, instead of just saying no, which we, of course, know the answer is no.
Right.
But I guess, you know, they said, we'll see what we can do. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah.
Fat
and
chance.
She hangs up the phone and she looks at my dad and she says, do you think they'll take that down like I asked? And she goes, and my dad goes, honey, it's the Elk Club. You called it a deer. They're not going to take it down for you.
It's going to be wearing a top hat.
What is the difference between a deer and an elk?
One's a deer and one's an elk.
Okay. Yeah. As you guys can know, I'm not a hunter.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got Councilman Mark Harder is online. Going to spend a few minutes with us. Councilman, how are you?
You have to press
honestly just showed him how to do
this. Carl
two showed, minutes ago.
Carl showed me how to do it.
We got him now. I can hear it.
Yeah, and now I've turned my volume up real loud.
Oh, boy.
Councilman Harder, how are you?
Hey, Chris. How you doing? Happy Black Friday.
I've been trying to stay away from the Black Friday jokes because I know I could have a million of them.
Before we get started,
yes.
I wanted to say hello to Councilman Harder. I saw Wednesday at Guns and Hoses at Tim Jones' table. We might touch on this again when the former speaker gets here. But what a cool event, right, Councilman? Every year, Guns and Hoses, just a really really neat thing to see here in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, and it's a great tradition. I think they're on their 50th year or somewhere around there.
33rd.
And, is that 33rd? Okay,
33rd
I thought
year.
It was a lot longer.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was longer, too. Yep.
But, no, it's a great tradition for St. Louis. I mean, it feels like the Christmas season doesn't even start until after Guns and Hoses, so... no, it was a great event and sellout crowd, and they made a lot of money. I'm pretty sure of that. There was a lot of money being exchanged there.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll probably at least meet, if not exceed, their previous year's collections. But it was a great event and great fun and one big party.
I'm wondering, do they open that up to politicians? Because I would love to see Councilman Harder get in the ring and go toe-to-toe with somebody.
Fire and police.
What do you think?
Yeah, that would be nice.
I mean, they can put politicians in.
Like a tag team?
Yeah, tag team. What do you think?
Yeah,
we talk you into that?
Oh, maybe we can do a Texas death match or something.
There you go. I like it.
Or cage match or something.
So, a cage match. Everybody gets in with chain. Two enter, one leaves.
There you go.
Before we begin, an elk is a deer, but a deer is not necessarily an elk.
Okay.
So the elk is the largest type of deer.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
Good to know.
Thank
now
you, Carl.
And goodbye.
You learned something.
Councilman, we got a couple of issues we want to talk to you about, get your thoughts on them. One of them is, the St. Louis Police, St. Louis County Police Board has had some shakeup. Chairman, whatever, I can't think of his name, Sam Page, has completely almost redone the board with new members. All of them have been approved kind of unanimously, no problem, except for one police board member, Dr. Laurie Punch. She has said some controversial things about the police, and the police union was against her. What are your thoughts on all of this, Councilman?
Well, we saw the posts on Facebook and Twitter and things that she said in the past, and they've since been scrubbed for the most part. But she's been very biased toward police in her posts, and we asked her questions in our council meeting the other day when we were kind of vetting and interviewing both of the candidates, and she danced around it. And it wasn't, for three of us, we weren't satisfied with her answer. So when it came to a vote, we voted a no vote. But because of the way the structure of our council, she was at least able to get a majority of the votes. And so she is now on the police board.
Now, as we said, she did say some controversial things. But what would you say to people that say, these are her thoughts, these are her private thoughts, but, she says that she can be unbiased when it comes to police matters. What do you say to people that say, hey, we all have our thoughts, but we can differentiate those from our duties?
Well, I guess the time will tell. And she says she can look at things without bias, and we'll see, because in her tweets she seemed to be very biased against police, and that's fine. You can have an opinion, but if you're going to be on a police board, like the way our system is set up, she is going to be judging police discipline issues. She's going to be setting policy. She's going to be hearing complaints from citizens. She's going to be trying to solve some problems and things like that. And if she can't at least come in with a open mind on some of these issues, I think that's going to be problematic for that type of board.
Councilman Harder, it's Tony Colombo again. Can you just give us an update on where we are with this whole police, St. Louis County police saga? You know, Sam Page has made some comments recently, and everybody's speculating on the future of Chief Belmar. Can you just talk about what are we still working on? Where are we at in this process? And do you feel like it's over and it's time to move on, or is this something that we're going to still be talking about for some time to come here?
I think we'll be talking about it off and on in the next couple of weeks, if not months. There are a number of issues that the police need to work through. There's probably some new policies that need to come out of some of this discussion. We've got a huge lawsuit that has been placed against the police and with a huge settlement, and we're appealing that settlement. We're not appealing the verdict, but we're appealing the $20 million settlement. And we'll see where that goes, and that's going to bring out its own mix of issues. So none of this is over, and that's another role of the police board. The police board has power to fire and to hire the police chief. And so if at some point in the near future, if they don't think that Chief Belmar is delivering on the promises that either they want or things that he's promised, they're probably going to have some hard decisions to make, but that's the role of the police board. That's the role that is set up under our charter. Some municipalities have, like the city of St. Louis, have a citizen review board that's separate from the police board. Ours acts as both. And if it's done properly, it should be acting as both. Sometimes it hadn't been in the past. And that was some of the reason why the chief executive has decided to change out the people that were on it, because I guess either he felt or under political pressure felt that they weren't acting in the interest of citizens and more as a citizen review board and just as a police board. So there's a lot of changes going on, and that's a big change, and we'll have to navigate the next weeks and months to go on this.
Oh, Jim.
Hey, Mark. Jim Gwinner, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, Jim.
Good. Hey, first of all, thanks for fixing that pothole outside my street.
I'm glad we can take care of it.
He was out there personally.
Yeah. You know, he had the shovel. He had the bag of cold fill asphalt. He was doing awesome. Hey, a quick question for you. You know, with policing and crime, I saw Attorney General Schmidt mentioned taking a look at a law enforcement crime this legislature. We've all heard and seen the stories about increases in carjackings and things that have kind of started happening in the county. What do you think are the biggest issues facing county residents right now, in addition to the police board and the hirings and the firings? But from a public safety standpoint, what are the big things on your radar screen and law enforcement's radar screen as we wrap up 19 and enter into 2020?
Well, the big thing right now is we're pretty much throughout the unincorporated section as well as some of the incorporated section of the county. Crime is fairly on the down slope. The stats are going down. But the big thing that's troubling is that two areas that are actually greater than last year, and one is murders. We're at 36 murders as of Thursday. In St. Louis County, and that's up from 32 the same time last year. And aggravated assaults with a firearm are up about 18% from this time last year. So those two things are very troubling, and those are the things that are the top priority, I believe, right now with the police, is trying to get a handle on that so that we don't we at least get equal to what we were last year and not be over last year. As all the other stats are from what the last time I looked, we're down sometimes 18-20% in some of these areas. So that part is a good part of it. Now I will mention that out in West County in my district, we've seen a spike in car thefts, car break-ins, and things tied with that. And with that, I organized a task force of all the police chiefs in West County, and we are now trying to get the word out to residents to lock their cars, lock their garages, take their personal expensive items out of the cars, and try to make this crime of opportunity less of a crime. And many of these crimes are committed because people have left their cars unlocked, actually left the keys in the cars. They've got their whole life on the front seat of their cars with laptops and cell phones and purses and guns and wallets, yeah, and you name it. And it's just easy pickings, right, for some of these, both teenagers and some organized crime to come into these neighborhoods, right, and rob people. And it just doesn't have to happen. It's, right, it's an easy fix if we can just lock our stuff up and close the garage doors, especially at night, and making sure that we're not easy targets for these crimes.
Councilman, I got a quick question for you. The council is ran by, has a Democratic majority, but Republican Ernie Trakas is the chair of the council. Why is that? Just curious.
Well, that's a leftover from earlier this year. If you remember, we had two vacancies when Sam Page left and Hazel Irby left. And those are two Democrat seats. And so at that point, we had five people on the council, of which three were Republicans. So we had the majority, and we voted in Ernie Trakas as our presiding officer at that time to finish out the year.
Oh, okay. I thought that
was so. He will be in that position until January 1st.
Got it.
Our first meeting in January will determine who will go forward as the chairman and vice chairman for the next year, and that's determined within the council itself.
Appreciate it.
So we'll see where that goes, and if Mr. Trakas stays on, or if the Democrats decide to vote in mass and bring on their own chairman and vice chairman. So we'll see where that goes.
That was Councilman Mark Harder. We appreciate your time. Councilman, give us social media or where people can get more information about your district or just St. Louis County government in general.
Oh, you can go. I have a Facebook page. It's called Council District 7 and County Council District 7, and I post things on there. You can always call my office, and now under our new phone system, you can actually just dial 311 from any cell phone, and you'll go right into our the county directory system, and you can navigate to my office and leave a message or talk to my assistant during normal business days.
That's your tax dollars at work. Mark Harder, Councilman Harder, calling in on a Friday, Black Friday, and the 311 system. Councilman, we appreciate your time. Thank you, and have a post-happy Thanksgiving, happy Black Friday, and a happy weekend.
You too, Chris.
Thank you, sir. I can hear that all day. And when we come back on the Andy Fry Show, the speaker. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. This is Chris Sarps. And as I teased all show, we've got the speaker.
I'm
Tim
in the
Jones.
House.
How are you?
Sucker off.
The hardest one.
The evil one crept up and slipped away with her.
I got all kinds of things here.
Bad and bougie.
The hardest working man at Intercom today. He hosted the Mark Cox Show. He's on the Andy Fry Show. And then he'll be going to our sister station in about a half hour doing the Reardon Roundtable.
Yeah, then they're gonna haul me out back and throw me in the dumpster because I'll be used up. How you guys doing? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, yeah, we can say now.
That's right. Exactly. I see Tony's putting the tree up over there.
Yeah, putting up the studio tree.
Oh, is that a secret?
It's okay. A little charming.
No, not at all.
He really looks like he's enjoying while he's doing it.
No, that is not a secret.
Him.
No, it's not a secret. It's ready to go.
You're making me nervous, though, Tony. Now I got to go home and start doing stuff.
Oh, I know.
It's like way too fast. It's like it's December 1st on Sunday. Yep. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Speaker, as you know, Tony and I co-host a show on Saturdays called The Weekend Report.
Yes.
And there's a segment that we do in there called The Weekend Review.
Okay.
And we basically go over the top news stories of the week. And since you're here and Tony's here and I'm here, we thought we'd just kind of recreate that on the mm-hmm. Annie Fry Show.
Fantastic.
Jim's here too.
And Jim, I'm sorry. I am here.
We're going to need more microphones.
I'm going to zing Jim here. Jim's here because there's no use watching the Mizzou game this afternoon.
We got it on.
It comes on shortly, man. I'll give you score updates.
Okay, very good.
First thing I want to get into is the national scene with impeachment and the president and all of that. Mainly the Democrats, which I think they are coming apart. You're starting to see a lot of disarray. You're starting to see, and I got an article here, I think it's from Newsweek, where they are starting to throw out the censure word instead of impeachment. You remember earlier this week, there was a black congresswoman from Ohio, I think, who basically let that cat out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to hear that starting to come out. So the odds-on favorite has been the Republicans have gone or Democrats have gone too far to stop impeachment. This is a train that's on the tracks, can't be stopped. What do you think, Mr. Speaker?
Well, this all started last Sunday when Adam Schiff was on Meet the Press or Chris Wallace. He was on one of those shows, and he was asked directly that very question. So, when are you going to have the impeachment vote? And I couldn't believe my ears. He was backpedaling furiously in refusing to say that it was going to happen. And this is California Adam Schiff, the guy who's been running the Soviet-style star chamber for the last several months. He said, you know, I thought this was hilarious. I have to go home and see what my constituents have to say.
Uh-huh.
You know, in California, right? What are they going to say? They're going to say, hang him high, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they've been wanting to get rid of Trump out there, you know, since before the day he took the oath. But so
since 2015.
I thought that was very interesting that it started with Adam Schiff. And then you're exactly right, Chris. Throughout the week, we've had this drip, mm-hmm. drip of various random people backing up. And you're talking about a Michigan congresswoman from a plus 30 D district. You're talking other congresspeople from very safe. So if the safe people in the safe districts, and I think they did that on purpose to test the waters, mm-hmm. are saying this, what do you think all of these congresspeople in these Trump won 2016 districts are hearing all weekend long as they're home in their home districts at the coffee shops, doing a little Christmas shopping, at all these festivals that we have going on? What do you think they're hearing? They're hearing, what have you all done this year other than hate on this president? Look, A lot of us get upset about some of the personality style. I think some of it's very entertaining. But, you know, I know a lot of people are dissuaded by the style, but it's hard to argue against the policy, especially when your 401k is about twice the value it was a couple of years ago. You've got a job. You've got opportunities. Your wages are rising. And we're in a relative peace, a period of peace and prosperity.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain the difference between a censure and an impeachment? Like, what are the... Yeah.
Well, we censured Maria Chappelle Nadal a couple years ago here in the Missouri General Assembly. It's a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. Okay. It can be everything from a slap on the wrist to you could have your committees. Well, they can't take anything away from the president.
Right, right.
So if you were in the legislature, they could take your committees away. Okay, I think they did this to Peter King on the Republican side.
Yes, they did.
You can take your committees away. You can take your assignments away. You can do things like that. With the president, though, because of the co-equal branches of government, a censure is going to simply be a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
But you know what? If they can get that vote and it's high enough, they'll all vote for it. And then Nancy Pelosi can declare victory and ride off in the sunset. They'll spin it into something else. Mm-hmm. I think they're very worried about this IG report that's coming, despite the spin you're hearing from the New York Times. And I think they're very worried about the fact that they forgot that after an impeachment, the whole kit and caboodle goes to the Senate, which is run by Republicans, mm-hmm. where Chief Justice Roberts is going to sit in the chair, where the 5 2020 Senate Democrat presidential hopefuls would have to come in and sit in that Senate gallery with their mouths zipped and their hands in their lap and sit there through Iowa, maybe New Hampshire, maybe South Carolina. While we bring in Joe and Hunter Biden to talk about Ukraine and the Burisma issue, I think they're all like, oh, we didn't really mean to go this far. We just thought this would be kind of score some political points, but they didn't move the meter, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario for them is that everybody's opinion before impeachment hearing began is the same as after.
I want to take this opportunity to have this discussion with all of you guys in the room as we're kind of doing this week in review style thing. Something that I find fascinating. We've been talking about the election and talking about the damaged candidates. We're talking last hour about, you know, these Democratic candidates running for president and how they are eating their own and how, you know, I personally can't see any of them beating Donald Trump. The first time I heard this idea was a couple weeks ago on the Dave Glover Show think tank. Alvin Reed, who is a Democrat, said that he does not believe that the person who will be the Democratic nominee for president is even running yet, or at least not among the front runners. I never heard that. I thought it was fascinating when he said it. And then, since then, over the last couple of weeks, I've heard more and more political pundits say that. Jim, I want to hear everybody's opinion. Yeah. What are the chances? Do you think there's any chance that the guy who wins the presidential nomination on the Democratic side is not even running yet, or at least not one of the front runners yet?
As far as the front runners, I think that's a very good possibility. I don't think you've seen Buttigieg pop up now in the Iowa the Iowa polls, but you don't want to be the number one person in the Iowa caucus in December, on December 1, when the caucus is 4 or 5 months away. That's a long campaign cycle. For those of us that have ever worked on campaigns, ran on campaigns, I think I'm less inclined to believe somebody like a Bloomberg who just got in.
Yeah.
He may run as an independent, which could give a whole nother dynamic to an election.
Yeah.
But I don't think the U.S. senator who hasn't announced yet is going to come back in. Or I don't know if I think Hillary's going to jump in or not. I really don't see that.
The idea is that it's so ripe now that these candidates are so weak that it's perfect timing for somebody to ride in on their white horse, save the day, and steal the nomination.
But whoever that person is, the Democrats' main problem is, and we talked about this last hour, they need somebody that can reunite all of their different factions. And the only person that I can see that is either Oprah Winfrey or Michelle Obama that can unite the super left-wing loonies with the moderates, with everyone else. Who else is out there that can unite all their different factions?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's
besides those two.
That's exactly right. The Democrats do not have the right person running right now that can beat Trump, and the wrong people keep getting in the race.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that another 70 plus year old wealthy old white guy, Michael Bloomberg, is going to save the day is just not going to work. And I'm gonna pull rank on Lewis Reed. I don't know if you guys just saw this today. The founder of BET, Robert Johnson. Did you have that article?
I got the story. I haven't done it yet, but go ahead.
He just said that President Trump is slated to win in 2020. The Democrats don't have anyone to beat him because they've gone full throttle nuts.
Yeah.
That's the founder of BET.
Barack Obama basically said that.
Barack Obama threw Joe Biden under the bus. So, I mean, they're searching for something that doesn't exist right now. Your point, Chris, is valid that Oprah or, I don't think Hillary,
Michelle Obama or Michelle could give him
a run. But at this point, it's getting really late in the game. Mm-hmm. A lot of the deadlines have now already passed to file in some of these states.
So do you think we even see anybody try to swoop in?
I think that after Iowa and New Hampshire, and no one is really broken out. I mean, people are kind of dogging out Bloomberg, but it's really a good strategy. If after the first four contests, no one really stands out, then, you know, the Democratic electorate will be like, well, we don't really see anybody we like. Maybe Bloomberg, and he can gonna wash the airwaves with money. So, I mean, it could be a good strategy for him.
Right.
Yeah. May not work. I don't know.
Saw an article that was a great analysis about why Democrats are infuriated at Bloomberg. Is they're worried that because he's got so much money to spend, he's going to trash all the candidates in all these other states, but he himself won't be popular enough to win. So he's going to harm the whole field, but yet not be good enough to win himself. So all he's going to do is do damage to everyone.
Totally. That's Mr. Speaker Tim Jones. We're going to be back with more of the, what are we calling this, Tony? Weekend review?
Weekend report roundtable. Yeah.
We're going to get into some stuff where I think the Democratic field is going to start to winnow out. And I've got some articles here that I think show that. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. This is Chris Sarps on Black Friday on 97.1 FM Talk. And just so the audience knows, Tony, go. You're fine, Tony. Tony is hard at work putting together the studio Christmas tree. Really, really getting into that.
It's been my job for years to be the person that either hangs lights or puts the tree up in the studio at Christmas time. And so I am doing my job.
You do it very well.
Thank you.
And as I said, we've got Tony, Jim Gwinner, Mr. Speaker, Carl Middleman. We're going to get back into the weekend report, weekend review. I got it straight. Mr. Speaker, and since you are the official attorney for 97.1, our attorney.
Today I am. I'm the only one in the room right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Today you are. Yeah. We want to get into a little bit about this $20 million verdict.
Yeah, don't tell Dave Glover that.
Oh, I forgot.
Only one in the room right now.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah. He says he doesn't practice.
Yeah, I'm recovering as well.
There you go.
Dave says Dave himself will say he was not a good lawyer.
He's been recovering longer than I have been. Yes.
I want to get into this $20 million verdict. You know, I thought that this was over. That hey, he's won. He's going to get his money by a matter of time before he gets his check. And there's a controversy with the strategy that county lawyers are using to get this overturned, I guess. Can you explain or go into that a little bit for us?
So there's a lot of complicated issues here, and without knowing all the legal background, I can definitely provide you basically kind of a general, like what generally happens after a jury verdict.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a jury verdict, a lot of people think, well, that's, like you said, that's the end of the story. No, that's not true. In every legal case, when the judge or jury makes a decision here in the state of Missouri, you have a certain period of time to file post-trial motions.
Right.
So you can file post-trial motions up to 30 to 40 days. They don't let you take forever. You got to make your mind. You got to make a decision pretty quickly to contest that verdict or that judgment by the judge. And you can make it under a lot of grounds. I looked at the article really quickly, and Chris, they're making an argument for a new trial. So their post-trial motion, the counties representing the police department, they want a new trial because they said that the plaintiff's attorney for the police officer made an improper argument to the jury based on current law in the state of Missouri that you could not recover under the Missouri Human Rights Act because sexual orientation is not a protected class.
Now, before you go forward,
yes,
the judge knows that. He's an attorney. He knows the law. Why didn't the judge
stop that attorney to be a judge?
Why wasn't this stopped then?
I don't know what instructions the judge gave the jury. The judge may have instructed them properly. Mm. And if the judge did instruct, despite whatever the plaintiff's attorney said in their closing argument, whatever you get a lot of latitude in your closing arguments, you know, your Perry Mason style closing arguments, you can get pretty dramatic.
Right.
As long as the judge gave the proper jury instructions to the jury and they base their decision on that, and a reasonable person could not decide that they did not, this verdict is going to be upheld.
So outside looking in, what I think the answer to that question is why did this happen? Why did the judge? We've seen around the country these types of cases where LGBTQ or something is attached to a law that they don't necessarily, that the law wasn't written for them, like this law in Missouri. And it's just that the judges are, they don't want to be the guy, they don't want to be the person that makes a stand and looks like they're somehow against a class of people. And so they just kind of let it go, let it ride, because they don't want to be the ones that make it look like they're, you know, anti-LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So they just kind of let this go because they don't want their next election to not go their way.
Or they know if it goes higher, it's just going to get shut down anyway.
Yeah, but back to my original point, though, there's a lot of causes of action that are put into a theory of a case, okay? And just because the attorneys for the county are saying that you can't give an award under the Missouri Human Rights Act for sexual orientation protection because it doesn't exist there, that doesn't mean that the judge necessarily gave the wrong instructions under some other legal theory by which this officer recovered this money, okay? Mm-hmm. So it really depends on how the judge instructed the jury to apply the facts to the law that he gave them. Now, what I think could happen, and maybe they filed this post-trial motion as well, I thought I heard that they did, the amount of the award could get reduced. And there may be a very good legal argument that, okay, This young man was aggrieved. He had a good cause of action. If the case was proper and it's not going to get overturned on the issue that they're making as to the legal theory, but was the award just simply beyond the pale? You know, maybe he still gets millions of dollars, but maybe he doesn't get $29 million. So
that was Tony's big problem. Like, $20 million.
Yeah, they still could do 30. It's called remittiture. They still could remit or reduce the judgment. So there's a lot of legal maneuvering going on after this massive verdict, and they're trying to find a way out of it or to reduce the pain in some way.
He's still showing up to work every day.
There you go.
I want to talk about an issue, Mr. Speaker, that I'm sure gave you plenty of headaches when you were in the legislature, and that is Medicaid.
Yes.
There is something that's on the ballot next year to, I guess, give Medicaid to everyone. Or expand it.
Expand
Look,
Medicaid.
I knew that Medicaid took a big part of the budget, but until I read this article, I didn't know. I think
that
our
it was
budget,
gazillions of dollars.
Our budget, Missouri's budget, is $33 billion, and Medicaid is $11 billion.
It's a third of the budget.
Third.
Yeah,
that's incredible. Do you think voters will pass this in a referendum? I know we saw Clean Missouri. Anything can happen, but what will we do if this is passed? We can't afford this.
So let's go back many, many, many years when Jim Gwinner and I were young pups running around pretending to we might get in politics someday.
When the budget was $11 billion.
Yeah. Governor Matt Blunt. Matt Blunt was governor, and Matt Blunt stood in the gap with a brand new Republican legislature, and they did massive Medicaid reform. Right. And remember, people were shackling themselves to the doors of the Missouri House and Senate, chaining themselves, and Matt Blunt was derided by all of our favorite people over at the Post Disgrace every day, and he was the worst governor ever. And you know what he did? He saved the state of Missouri over $1 billion that would have been carved out of our education budget or whatever other budget. And so they did reform. The left hated it. Ever since then, they've been trying to put that money back in. And I just said no during my term there. We said no to Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. We've said no to Medicaid expansion for almost a decade under the new Obamacare law. Now they're trying to do it by the ballot. Now, it will pass, as it has in every other state, unless Missourians, who are very frugal people, right? We're very small C, even the Democrats in the state, especially the independents. We have rejected every tax increase, every nickel, dime, penny, quarter for cigarette. Even cigarette taxes get shot down. If Missourians understand that this will raise their taxes and will blow holes in the budget, I think they could reject it. But we're also compassionate people in Missouri. And if they see on the ballot, hey, free health care for everybody, and it's not really explained to them where it's going to come from, people will vote yes.
Yep. Now, I want to talk about an issue that is very dear to Jim Gwinner's heart. Jim is the past alumni president of the Mizzou. Did I get that right? Mizzou Alumni Association.
M-I-Z.
And Mizzou is in a little trouble with the NCAA. I think they've gotten a completely raw deal. But Jim Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so a little bit more than a year ago, the NCAA came out, and Mizzou self-reported an infraction
right.
where a student was taking some tests for, I think it was about a dozen student-athletes that were from the football, the baseball, and I think women's softball programs.
Yep.
And the NCAA came down with this list of infractions, including scholarship reductions, limited recruitment visits, mm-hmm. and a bowl ban, specifically
right.
a postseason ban for those three sports, including this year, although I'm not sure it's going to matter.
Yeah.
Take it this year.
But it looked like it was going to matter big time.
Before the Wyoming game, it sure looked like it mattered.
And is that the first game of the season?
It was.
That was the first game. And I'm a huge Mizzou. I mean, I'm first kid in my family to go to college. Right. I love Mizzou. I'm proof conservatives can come out right. of a large state right. institution of higher education. I love the place. I love everything about Mizzou. But this was a raw deal. You look at Mississippi State, mm-hmm. the infractions they committed, the violations that they admitted to, the penalties that the NCAA gave. This was a complete misapplication of justice by the NCAA. It was arbitrary. I'm not sure if I don't know what the word capricious means, Tim. I'll defer.
I think it applies here.
Okay, well,
it applies here, Jim.
You said something.
I always thought Jim was a lawyer.
No.
Yeah. Sounds like one.
No.
Yeah.
You said something key at the very beginning of your statement. Is that Mizzou self-reported.
They did.
And in the past, with these NCAA rule breakers, for lack of a better term, obviously, if an institution turns themselves in and does their own investigation, that's taken into account by the NCAA and usually will result in a lesser punishment. And it didn't seem like Mizzou, it didn't seem like that applied for Mizzou for some reason.
It seemed like Mizzou self-reported.
Yeah, they did everything right after they found out that about the rule breaking.
So once they self-reported, you know, and this decision came out, and then the appeal and the denial of the appeal came out. What this is telling institutions of higher education across the country now is, one, don't cooperate with the NCAA.
Right.
Don't
yeah.
self-report.
Right.
We saw State Senator Caleb mm-hmm. Rowden put a very, very well-versed letter out Thursday or Friday, the day after the announcement came out. I think the ban came out Monday, so Tuesday the letter came out. A lot of people are reaching out to the NCAA, expressing their opinion. They are saying, you know, that just the frustration. And there's a lot of words I can't use
right.
on the air.
Right, right.
Did the NCAA ever say why it took so long? Also, that was a ridiculous
yeah.
part
this
of this.
Is a,
this
beginning
is,
of the year.
The appeal
this lack
took
of a
so long.
They could have done nothing like they just did 6 months ago. They could have
yeah.
given clarity to the institution. Because this is not affecting the students who had someone mm-hmm. take the tests
right.
several years ago. This is affecting those student athletes on campus now. This is affecting the football players who had nothing to do with this infraction, the baseball players, the softball players. This is harming those students. And I look at those other institutions, this just exemplifies what the problems are with the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm speaking on my own behalf,
mm-hmm.
not as part of an organization, but there's a lot of frustration amongst the Mizzou boosters around the state. I think you're gonna see potentially somebody introduce legislation this session, but there's a lot of frustration that goes beyond just the first
yeah.
game and the 6th through the 10th games this season.
Well,
not counting the 5 wins.
We've talked about impeachment. We've talked about all kind of issues. I think that's the most animated Jim has been today talking about.
An important thing for people to know about this story is that it does not affect the basketball team.
Yes.
So
people
are wondering about like the NCAA tournament or you know if the basketball team. This is football, baseball, and softball. Mm-hmm. The basketball team is not included in
right.
this NCAA situation.
Mr. Speaker is about to leave us. Do you want to give a plug where you're going in about 10 minutes?
Thanks, fellas. I'm
going
to jump on down the hallway to the Mark Reardon Friday Roundtable. His roundtable is next. I probably got to arm wrestle Jane Duker. So, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Tell Jane I said hello.
I will.
That's Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Carl. We've got one more broadcast hour left. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.